This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
Tomas Rota from the University of Greenwich will present the paper on productive accumulation in the United States, a new analytical frame.
All right, folks. Thanks for the invitation to present. I just finished my PhD, and I joined Greenwich. So the paper I'm presenting comes out of my PhD dissertation. All right. I know this is the post-Keynesian study group, but I'm going to use Marxist theory too. So it's a very elastic definition of post-Keynesianism. That's the title of the paper. It's on the website if you're curious about it. It's very short, only 72 pages long, all right? Because it has a big appendix, all right? In the appendix, I explain in detail what I do, how I calculate the measures, and the appendix is actually longer than the paper itself, all right? So first, the broad question that I have in mind, what the hell is happening in the U.S. economy? My entry point here in this paper is the accumulation of unproductive capital. And the specific question that I'm addressing is, what are the historical patterns of unproductive capital accumulation, and what are the economic effects of unproductive accumulation in the United States, all right? And I'm using data from 1947 to 2011, all right? My methods, theoretical, political economy in general, and Marxist theory in specific. Empirically, descriptive analysis, time series econometrics. My data comes from input-output tables. I'm using the benchmark tables, not the smaller ones. These are 500 by 500 tables, all right? We have to mount them since 1947. Put labels, sometimes it's a lot of manual work, takes many weeks to do it, and the NIPA numbers too, all right? And I'm going to transform them into Marxist categories, all right? So let me skip this, because we are all post-Keynesians. So this is just the terminology.
Because you all know then you want to say.
Yeah, all right? The crucial thing here is the distinction between what is a productive activity and what is an unproductive activity. Notice that I don't talk about sectors, I talk about activities, all right? The correct language is productive activities and unproductive activities, not sectors. Because a single firm, one firm, can have productive activities and unproductive activities, all right? Not sectors, but activities. Productive produces produces surplus value, and unproductive does not produce surplus value. Right? It sets value from elsewhere. So productive activities, they produce commodities with value. And some people are going to say, oh, that's redundant, right? Why do you say commodities with value? That's redundant, because all commodities have value. No, I'm going to show you that's not the case. Some commodities are commodities and they don't have value in the Marxist sense, all right? So these activities produce new value, and hopefully surplus value. It's not just value, but it's surplus value. Unproductive activities do not produce value. They can produce commodities, but they don't produce value. So they claim a share on the value produced by the productive activities. All right? Examples. Here's where the contentious part begins. All right? Examples of unproductive activities. Trade, only trade margins, not transportation. Transportation is transportation. Transportation is not trade. Only trade margins here, okay? Wholesale and retail, finance and insurance, that's a big chunk. Real estate, the famous land rents. Government activities, like the army, the police, public administration. And now I'm making a new claim. Knowledge. The production of knowledge and the production of information belong to the unproductive side of capitalism. Knowledge, when it's commodified knowledge is valueless in the Marxist sense of value. Knowledge has no value in the Marxist sense of value. It is a commodity. Knowledge and information, when they are commodified, they become a commodity, but they don't have value. It's unlike any other commodity. Examples: software, like Windows, Linux, recorded music and movies, like Hollywood, for example. Hollywood is unproductive. Hollywood does not, those actors are exploited. Cameramans, they are all exploited, but there is no surplus value there. Scientific knowledge. When we teach, we are productive. But when we do research, we are unproductive. Right? Pharmaceutical companies, medicine, no value there. Why? Why is the production of knowledge and information on the unproductive side of capitalism? Well, many Marxists make a mistake here because they read the first volume of Capital and say, oh, I have understood Marx because I read the first volume. No, don't do that. People, if you read volume 1, you think that what determines the amount of value of any commodity is the labor time necessary, and I put there in red, the labor time necessary to produce a commodity. If you read volume 1, that's what you get. However, Marx talks about production because in volume 1 there is only production. There is no reproduction. When you go to volume 3, when there is reproduction of capital, he rephrases that. Once he introduces the reproduction of capital into the picture, he says the value of any commodity is determined not by the labor time originally taken by their production, but rather by the labor time necessary for their reproduction. Because now the reproduction of capital is in the picture. Well, knowledge and information, they require a lot of labor to be originally produced, but not to be reproduced. Knowledge and information are valueless commodities, no value, no surplus value, so they belong to the unproductive side of capitalism. What about the profits that Microsoft makes, the big pharma, Hollywood? Those profits are knowledge rents. They are rents. Very similarly to what we have with land rents. Now we have knowledge rents, and the owners of knowledge are knowledge lords. Bill Gates, the richest man on the planet, is a knowledge lord. By the way, a side note, that's the labor theory of value of commodified knowledge. Not even the Frankfurt School could do this. The Frankfurt School, and I'm talking about Adorno, Walter Benjamin, Habermas, they tried to theorize knowledge in capitalism. They did it for decades. But they could never put the Marxist theory of knowledge production in capitalism and the labor theory of value together. The Frankfurt School never did it. It's there. And this comes out of Brazil. My friends in Brazil did it. And I'm trying to work with them. This is big stuff, alright? And I'm going to show, because I'm trying to measure this. Alright? The US economy, every year, relies more and more on knowledge. And I'm going to show you the calculations, alright? So historical trends, what I find historically. The rate of exploitation of productive workers. All right, from 1947 to 2011. Interesting trend. Reaches a peak in 1966. Drops until 1980. The crisis of Keynesianism. And then it rises sharply. It doubles in the neoliberal era. All right? Now, Marx said that the root cause of inequality is exploitation. Well, just put that together with Piketty's data for the top 0.1%, you get a very nice correlation. Exploitation, the rate of exploitation together with the income share that goes to the top 0.1%, the capitalists. If you calculate the correlations using, let's say, top 1%, top 0.1%, or the inverted Pareto-Lorentz coefficient, and the profit-wage ratio, you get those correlations. If you use the methodology developed by Sheikh and Tonak, you get these correlations between exploitation and inequality. If you use my methodology for the same period as Anwar Sheikh, you get higher correlations. And if you use the full period, from 1947 to 2011, you get much higher correlations. Almost 100% between inequality and exploitation. Because it's exactly what Marx suggested in Capital. The root cause of inequality is exploitation. I just put them together. All right. Now, four measures, four relative measures of unproductive accumulation. The first one, these are relative measures, flows over flows. First one, it's the net income of unproductive activities divided by the net income, divided by surplus value. These are unproductive measures divided by productive measures. All right? First one, net income of unproductive activities divided by surplus value. The second one, the dashed line, net unproductive income divided by net productive income. The bold line, it's the gross income of unproductive activities divided by the gross income of productive activities. And the last one, surplus against surplus. The surplus of unproductive activities divided by the surplus from productive activities. They are on the same scale. They all rise. It seems to be that there is a secular trend in the U.S. economy towards more and more unproductive accumulation. These are just flows over flows, all right? No stocks here. All right. In terms of employment, the bold line, the share of unproductive employment, and the corresponding, the complementary share for productive employment. Now, the dotted line is the amount of unproductive workers divided by the productive workers, and the bold line is their compensation. The bold line is the unproductive compensation divided by productive compensation. It means that the share of unproductive workers is rising, but their compensation is rising even faster.
Can you just tell me what the share is? Again, I can't make sure.
These are shares, right?
Sure.
Then I divide. These are shares. Yeah, I divide one by the other.
I can't read the values of the
one. Okay.
So
the dot.
Where are we at the end?
The numbers. What's now the numbers? Like it's 140% or something.
Oh, here?
Yes.
This is 75, okay. Here 170%.
Okay.
Dotted line, unproductive workers divided by productive workers.
Okay.
And the dark line, unproductive compensation divided by productive compensation.
Okay.
All right? Just to show you that unproductive employment is rising.
Secularly,
okay, thank you.
But unproductive compensation is rising even faster. All right? Two profit rates. The first profit rate, surplus value divided by the stock of capital. Then I break down the stock of capital between the productive stock of capital and the unproductive stock of capital. I divide everything by V, the value of labor power. So here we have the rate of exploitation of productive workers divided by the OCC, the organic composition of capital, plus what I'm calling the unproductive composition of capital. The unproductive composition of capital is the unproductive capital stock divided by the value of labor power. All right? If we exclude from surplus value the wages of unproductive workers, we get a net measure of profit.
Would you measuring in price value?
Could we have a question after the presentation?
Yeah, it's all in monetary terms. All right? So just remember, This is the Marxist rate of profit, and this one I just net out all the wages of unproductive workers to get a net measure of profit. All right, and they look like this: the bold line, the Marxist profit rate, and the dotted line, the net profit rate. Notice that the profit rate is falling in the 10 years prior to the 2007 crash. All right, big recovery here in the Reagan years. A peak in 1997, and the profit rate falls for 10 years consecutively until 2007. All right. Next, the organic composition of capital here, together with the unproductive composition of capital here. I'm just saying this because many Marxists say, oh, the profit rate is falling because the organic composition is rising. Well, there is a... You have to look at the unproductive composition of capital too. All right? And here it's rising much faster. All right? If you divide one by the other, you get this. If you divide the unproductive by the organic composition of capital, you get this graph, which is the stock of unproductive capital divided by the stock of productive capital. Notice what happens after 1981. It rises every year. In the neoliberal phase, the stock of unproductive capital rises every year and very sharply. Now, the determinants of profitability. I don't know if you can see this. This line here, the dotted line, these are index numbers, all right? The base year is 1980. Dotted line, the rate of exploitation. The dashed line here is the unproductive compensation divided by productive compensation of workers. It rises together with exploitation, so it's eating from the surplus, from surplus value. And notice that the unproductive composition of capital rises much faster than the organic composition of capital after 1980, right? These are index numbers, right? 1980 is the base. So actually, the unproductive composition of capital explains much more than the organic composition in terms of profitability, right? This is very interesting. If you put exploitation and profitability together, look at what you get. Bold line, exploitation, dashed line, profitability, the general profit rate. Until 1980, they move together. The axes are different, all right? This is the axis for profits and this is the axis for exploitation. Until 1980, they move together. The trends are very similar. But after 1980, exploitation rises sharply, but profitability not so much. What I'm claiming is that this disconnection here is because of unproductive accumulation. All right? Now, when I decompose the net income, this is the net income. This is difficult to see. This is the net income of all unproductive activities in the U.S. So these are shares. The big chunk here, the government. Government enterprises are productive, so they are not here. This is government, this is public administration. Then finance and insurance here, the second chunk. Here, non-profit organizations and other unproductive services, like lawyers, for example. Here, real estate. And the last one, the knowledge rents. Okay? This is my first estimate of knowledge rents in the U.S. Let me just warn you that this is a gross underestimation of knowledge rents. Knowledge rents are supposed to be much more than that, but that's the best that I could do using the benchmark input-output tables. All right? If I could look at every single balance sheet of every firm, I could come up with a better approximation. All right? But using input-output tables, that's what I get. Here, just to summarize, real...
You have five.
Oh, I have five? Oh, I thought you said that was...
No.
Here, real growth rates, the average for the whole post-war period. Here averages for the regulated period until 1979, and here in the from 1980 onwards. First thing that you can notice, these are all productive measures. All right, they are cut into half. After 1980, all the productive measures they drop sharply. After, when you look at the data, 1979 is a watershed in the U.S. All right, but unproductive activities, they remain at a faster pace and much faster than their productive counterparts. Then, so what? These are just measures, right? So what? Well, there's an early debate. The oldest one that I know is between Ricardo and Malthus. Ricardo said there's a problem, because if we have too many unproductive activities, they are going to claim a big chunk of the surplus. And less of the surplus is left for productive investment. Malthus said the opposite. Malthus said, no, unproductive activities are good because they boost aggregate demand. Right? Ricardo is saying there is left, when we have faster productive accumulation, there is left of surplus value to be reinvested productively, and that's bad. And Malthus is saying, no, unproductive activities are good. And we have this debate today, right? Between productive stagnation and faster productive accumulation. This debate goes on. You know, the Monthly Review, Baranen Suisi, David Harvey. The Monthly Review makes this claim all the time, in every single issue. It's always there. Why do we have financialization today, for example? Oh, because we had productive stagnation before in the U.S. The U.S. economy financialized because it had productive stagnation before. David Harvey makes the same claim. And then we have people making the opposite claim. We have people saying, no, why do we have productive stagnation in the first place? And they say, oh, because before that, we had more growth in the on the unproductive side. People like Anwar Sheikh, he makes this claim. Edward Wolf from New York University. And many Keynesians on financialization. Financialization is a subtype of unproductive accumulation. All right? Financialization is a subtype of unproductive accumulation. So then I said, okay, I have the measures, so, you know, I can do econometrics to see what I get. First, using cointegration, there is no stable long-run equilibrium. Productive and unproductive measures, they do not tend towards a long-run equilibrium. There is no stable common trend between them in the long run. There is no cointegration factor. And I ran 100 different models. With different lags, different specifications, there is no cointegration between productive and unproductive activities. They do not tend towards an equilibrium.
Okay. You have 1 minute.
For the short run, using the VAR framework, what I did find was, if I put on the unproductive side the unproductive capital stock, and on the productive side the total value produced by productive activities, the effect is positive. Productive and unproductive activities, they are mutually reinforcing. The effects are positive both ways. However, if I put the unproductive, if the share of unproductive capital, then the effect becomes negative. Both ways. This means that productive and unproductive activities, they tend to reinforce each other. If the unproductive capital stock rises, total value produced by productive activities rise too. But if the unproductive capital stock rises too much and faster than the productive capital stock, then it imparts a negative trend in the total value of productive activities. To the best of my knowledge, I might be wrong, but to the best of my knowledge, this is the first econometric test. Sorry, I didn't sleep this night. I really didn't sleep. This is the first econometric test using Marxist categories, using this methodology that I have developed to calculate Marxist categories, including knowledge as a valueless commodity, and try to provide this econometric test of verbal claims that famous Marxists have made in the past. And this paper I'm still finishing, so if you have comments, they are certainly welcome. So I'll finish here.
Okay. Thank you very much.